You can listen to The Professional Left on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There is a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for January 3rd, 2014. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from the Steve Ducey Mensa induction ceremony, it's The Professional Left with Drift Glass and Blue Gal.
That's just a little Mensa humor there for you.
Yeah, I think it should be subduction, but...
Well, we're going to talk about Steve Ducey in a minute, but I have one little piece of news that I'm going to blow your mind with.
Really?
Yeah.
Does it involve cookies?
No.
Because I like cookies.
Well, I mean, we could have more cookies, but that's not what it involves.
Then I'm sitting down.
All right. 18 days from now.
Yeah.
Is our 4-year anniversary as podcasters.
You're kidding me.
The 21st of January, 2010. The date of our first podcast.
You're kidding me.
Nope.
My goodness.
4 years.
We have been podcasting longer than we've been married.
That's true. That's true. We announced our engagement on the
podcast. What's slightly terrifying?
That we podcasted on our wedding day?
Well, that's just stupid.
We did.
That's just ridiculous. That we haven't missed a week since.
Yes, we have.
No, we haven't.
Okay, well, you stick with that story, but that's just not true.
I'd like the listeners to go back through every old episode and find out if we've...
No, we didn't do it every week at the beginning.
That's true. We were young and in love.
We were young and something, but yeah. No, we...
Well, we were several hundred miles...
Eventually, we got disciplined enough to do it every week, and...
We were several hundred miles apart, too.
Yeah, we were. That for a long time, yeah. For the first couple of years. And we got married in August of 2011. So really, the first 2 years, we were not in the same house. So, and after we were married, weren't we living apart a little bit?
We were. I was sort of commuting back up and down from the big city because I sort of had a job there that was sort of part time, but was hoping to make it into something more full time. Then, of course, I was doing a great job. My boss loved me. Et cetera. And then the funding just vanished.
Bye.
So, there's no more money for what you do.
And the good news is that you got to come home and be with your wife full time. So that worked out well.
It was always lifted my heart greatly to round that corner or get off that train and see my family there.
Yeah. This is the better of all possible worlds in that regard. I'm glad you don't work in Chicago anymore.
It's in the top third.
Yeah.
I would like a lot more folding money too. I'd like to be able to roll around on my bed, roll in money, just filthy, filthy lucre.
Well, I would like to thank the people that have sent us $5, $10 more over the course of the past 4 years. My goodness.
Now it's harder to roll in cookies, but we do take cookies.
And we got cookies we've got yarn. People are very generous with us. Books, yarn,
old magazines, and I don't mean old nasty magazines. I mean
sci-fi magazines, and just people. Our listeners, I think, treat us very well. And
they do.
The 1% of you who donate, the 1% of our listeners who donate, and it really boils down to about that. We just appreciate that.
Yeah, very much.
Great.
Yeah, next year is going to. Well, this next year is. I'm not waxing nostalgic because I don't believe in the good old days. But this next year will be 10 years for you as a blogger.
Yep, that's right.
Which is very impressive.
Well, I don't know if I can count myself as a blogger anymore, but I do write for Crooks and Liars from time to time. So
I'll vouch for you, darling.
Thank you. Certainly my presence on the internet is 10 years old. Yes.
Yes, it is. And 2004 was a big year for liberal politics. It really was a radicalizing year.
It was.
A
lot of us found the internet and found each other.
Well, a lot of us looked with absolute astonishment that George W. Bush won.
Stole the presidency the second time around.
Now, I'm going to say he was elected.
Oh,
because he got 60 million votes and change. And that's a statistic that I like to hang on to as virtually every conservative and Republican within shouting distance has decided they never heard of George Bush.
Yeah.
What was most depressing about that period was the absolute sort of domino falling predictability of what would happen next.
Mm-hmm.
You could just see where this was going.
Yep.
Because it was obviously unsustainable. Mm-hmm. You couldn't, you just could not, the lies that the GOP had built for themselves were just, not just merely unsustainable, but they were so in such aggressive tension with everything they'd said during the Clinton years about holding presidents to account. And, you know, it's not my war. Bill Clinton can go screw himself. If he fails, he fails. And you can support the troops and still impeach the commander in chief. What's wrong with that? And this, the psychosis was in full effect in 2004. Mm-hmm. And you just knew where it was going to go. It was going to end up with eventually you have Ted Cruz. I mean, yeah. It's simply a matter of the formula working itself out. Eventually, if you put all those elements in place and put them in motion in the same way that the conservatives have put themselves in motion, eventually you get Louis Gohmert. And
well, you know, I wanted to tell you that Ted Cruz edged out Louis Gohmert for a very important award this week.
Really?
Yeah.
Most foreign-born no. Crazy person?
Louis Gohmert was the close runner-up, but Ted Cruz won. And he won the Wonket Turd Muffin of the Year Award.
That's very prestigious.
Yeah.
You have to go some to get that.
Yeah. The person that really stunk up things the most. Well, and the fact is that Louis Gohmert didn't – he was a turd muffin, but he really didn't change the course of history for the worst way that Ted Cruz did. So I want to talk to you about the big news story, as far as I'm concerned, this week, which was the New York Times Benghazi story.
Yeah.
And this reflects –
I'm sorry. What you meant to say was the New York Times clearing the deck
for Hillary.
For story. Hillary. Yeah. The New York Times conspiring with the White House to cover up the worst scandal in American history. Right? Exactly. That's what you meant to say, right?
Well, and it reflects so much what we've been talking about for 4 years on this podcast.
And 10 years.
How the right changes facts.
Yes.
Or denies facts in a very systematic way so that their truth, quote unquote, is the only story that the media can cover.
Yeah.
And I was just shocked. I mean, mouth open shocked. When I turned on my liberal television to MSNBC and heard, and I can't remember who it was, but one of the women, and there were so many substitutes on this week, so it could have been anyone, but it was a woman announcer saying, and I'm quoting this because I'm actually reading it from the MSNBC website right now.
Uh-huh.
Lawmakers are pushing back on the New York Times Benghazi report.
Yeah. Isn't that a nice headline? Lawmakers.
And first of all, what law has the Republican House of Representatives passed except for renaming a bridge?
Well, they've repealed Obamacare 420 million times. Almost. Getting closer every time.
And when the headline on your liberal television is lawmakers push back.
Yeah.
So there's a controversy to report. And then we're done. We haven't heard anything about it since.
No.
And this Benghazi reporter, who, to their credit, MSNBC put on the air, made the semantic point. He said, if you're going to call everyone who's against America and is likely a Muslim, Al-Qaeda, the way, you know, what is that documentary that you're always talking about? The Nightmares?
The Power of Nightmares. Wonderful documentary.
Wonderful documentary about communism.
Yes.
Being this imaginary enemy that allows people like Dick Cheney to increase the military budget and do whatever he wants to with foreign policy because there's this enemy out there. And that's what Al-Qaeda is. Al-Qaeda is just this big,
scary global
Muslim global conspiracy against America.
Well organized.
Yes.
You know, monolithic. And mind you, your use of the term communist.
Mm-hmm.
The term Al-Qaeda is thrown around with as much profligacy.
Yeah.
As Rush Limbaugh talks about the communists on the left. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, really, anybody who is left of Ted Cruz, according to a whole lot of lawmakers and everyone on right-wing talk radio and a shitload of commentators on Fox News, are communists.
Yeah.
So and virtually every conservative you can find on the internet all agree that Barack Obama and everyone who's in the Democrat Party is a communist.
Mm-hmm.
Just in the same way that everyone, if you draw a big red circle around everything from Africa to, I don't know, Estonia, who doesn't like America, is Al-Qaeda.
Is Al-Qaeda. And so this New York Times reporter was saying, look, if that's how you define Al-Qaeda, then everybody's Al-Qaeda. But if you're talking about people who actually work for Osama bin Laden and who are connected organizationally to those who committed the World Trade Center destruction.
Yes.
These ain't these guys. That's not the same people.
Not even close.
And yeah, these people wanted to hurt Americans, and they were protesting this video after all. It turns out the White House and Susan Rice were telling the truth. That's what it was about.
Oh, let me add one thing. Yeah. This article doesn't in any way exonerate the White House.
No. Oh, no. No.
It no way says, this is all just, you know, everything the White House said was true and right.
Absolutely.
And righteous.
No.
It's pretty brutal. I mean, it takes them to task for being unprepared and
not enough security and a wishful thinking and everything's going to be fine and not being ready. And
all the things that you would want a free and fair press to do to hold people in power to account. If you're a Republican, you would be thrilled by this.
Yeah.
If you're a Democrat, you should be thrilled by this. This is your press holding your political
government to account. Yep.
To account. But in the process of doing that, it undercuts a foundational lie on which the right is now precariously balanced.
Well, it's not just precariously balanced. It is actively fundraising.
Oh, yes. Well, I mean,
this is money.
You can't, that lie cannot be allowed to be debunked.
Right, in any way.
It can't, they cannot allow that to happen. No. So they have to mount up an entire army of orcs to come in to defend what is on its face completely indefensible. Which is Barack Obama deliberately ignored. He and Hillary Clinton were eating popcorn.
He and Hillary Clinton were watching the attack happen live.
And we were somehow in league with the Al-Qaeda. It was on purpose. It was deliberate. And it was, you know, it was palling around with terrorists.
And as, you know, our new Mensa member, Steve Doocy, points out.
And you quote.
And Steve Doocy says that, well, it turns out the New York Times knew who was attacking in Benghazi. So why didn't they tell us back then when it was happening?
Because they were
they're on the ground. They must have known who these people were who were, as he put it, in other words, they would know essentially who murdered our four Americans.
And they're refusing to tell.
So Steve Doocy wants you to know that the New York Times is right up there with Hillary Clinton laughing at the death of four Americans because they knew who did it, of course.
Well, and the thing that I was watching.
He makes my brain hurt, by the way.
Well, I was watching Chris Hayes on my liberal television tonight. And he basically said, look, this story is now over. Mm-hmm. The sort of core of the story. But he's reading my blog, guys. No, he's not really reading. But the core of the story is dead. It just the foundational lie of the conservative movement about Benghazi is simply not true. And therefore, the story's over, and we should not expend and so much time and so much energy. And the CBS network, the Tiffany network, this lie has been allowed to fester for so long and has taken up so much time and money, taxpayer money, having witch hunts.
Daryl Issa is going to call for more hearings, though.
And he said
we haven't had enough hearings.
And Chris Hayes finally, this is where he is a blogger in this sense, in that he just basically yelled, "Stop it!"
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you know, we've had it. It's enough. Let's move on.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to say it's so adorable when they're that age, because nothing's going to stop this.
Nothing's going to stop it at all.
Until you burn down metaphorically David Gregory's house.
What you need to do is when the next time Daryl Issa has a hearing, a Democrat on that committee needs to have a telethon counter behind him.
Yeah.
With dollar signs going up and saying, this is the money that Daryl Issa is raising on doing this, on being this guy who goes after Barack Obama. I went on Daryl Issa's campaign website tonight.
Yeah.
It's got IRS, Benghazi, Acorn, every single thing on there. Oh, and Obamacare. And we need to repeal Obamacare. That's the four horsemen of the Daryl Issa apocalypse.
Uh-huh.
Our, you know, IRS scandal, which was debunked. Benghazi, debunked. Obamacare, which They might still get away with repealing it, though.
They might.
If America can be saved, you know, they might. Uh-huh. And Acorn, which is older than this podcast.
Yes.
That's how old Acorn is.
The demise of Acorn is older than this podcast.
Yeah. It's all alive and well on Daryl Issa's website, and where you can donate to Daryl Issa.
What Chris Hayes misses, he doesn't miss, he's a smart guy, but what he can't come to terms with is he has a small megaphone. Mm-hmm. His colleagues over in the real news department have a giant microphone, giant megaphone. George Stephanopoulos has a big megaphone. David Greger has a big megaphone. There are big institutional people. I'm not saying they're
well, you know, and these are elected officials.
What I'm saying is the elected officials are never going to be held to account for the lies they tell, as long as they tell them to Republicans in their district. Well, that's just never going to happen.
Also, because they are elected officials and have the word U.S. representative at the beginning of their name, they can always be brought on the Sunday shows.
Sure.
With complete legitimacy to talk about issues.
There's the problem.
And Representative Mike Rogers was the number one person
Republican
on Sunday
Representative
shows.
Mike Rogers. Number two is John McCain.
John McCain.
And right down the list, in terms of frequency and number of hours, it's overwhelmingly Republicans are on there. Yeah. And that would be fine if the Sunday shows were about roasting Daryl Issa alive. If the Sunday shows were about this criminally insane, vicious, incompetent, lying huckster named Daryl Issa, who is destroying our ability to have legislative hearings because he turns them all into witch hunts.
Yep.
If that was the story, which is the story, if that was the story David Gregory were pursuing, then that would be fine.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not the story that any of Chris Hayes's colleagues is pursuing, because the minute they do that, they're going to join Martin Bashir on the unemployment line.
Yeah.
So they're not going to do it. That's the problem. And what was so fascinating to me over the weekend with this story was not, oh my God, the New York Times came out with a story that makes, you know, that makes this, that sucks all the oxygen out of the room.
Mm-hmm.
What was fascinating to me was watching the people on the left, and usually sort of the thinkers, people who write magazine editorials, talking about, well, that settles it.
Yep.
Like, what fucking planet do you live on?
Because you know Daryl Issa is going to be on Meet the Press on Sunday lying, and he's just going to lie.
And the
other
thing,
story is lawmakers push back, and then you're done.
Well,
you fixed it.
The second thing that was fascinating to me was watching in real time the right reconstitute itself and come back louder and angrier.
It did for several hours suck all the oxygen out of the story.
And during that several hour period, which I was watching on the Twitter, all they did was shout and scream and yell and jump up and down hysterically.
Mm-hmm.
And then Fox News, trusty Fox News, came to the rescue with a story about how outraged people on the ground were who knew what was really going on. Nothing but anonymous sources. Nothing but Fox News anonymous sources. So now we have Fox News anonymous sources pushing back. So now we have lawmakers taking up the Fox News story.
Mm-hmm.
Then we have Breitbart.com reprinting the Fox story, saying this is now in a controversy.
Yes.
You know, the witnesses say, no, anonymous Fox, God knows who they are, if they even exist. Fox, the networks that lies about everything
Roger
else.
Roger Ailes in a board meeting at 30 Rock. That's what it is. Those are the sources.
And
Roger
Ailes. You see it go from Fox News to Breitbart. Now it's two sources.
Then to Politico.
Then to Politico.
Then to MSNBC.
Then on to lawmakers.
Yeah.
And then you have 5 or 6 or 10 or 20 deeply invested wing nuts screaming their head off about Fox News and Hillary Clinton and one Democrat.
And New York Times and Hillary Clinton.
And one Democrat, one blue dog asshole Democrat who's willing to cast some doubt whether or not it's, you know, completely legitimate. Now it's bipartisan.
Yeah. Yep.
And the thing that is most predictable, again, going back 10 years, the same people, and I'm saying this advisedly, the same people who made a living hiding behind dead Americans in Iraq, the same chicken hawk, cowardly traitors who made a living hiding behind the flag and hiding behind dead soldiers and calling liberals traitors for questioning their government, for asking whether or not shoveling trillions of dollars and thousands of lives down their neocon rat hole on what turned out to be lies for which they have never been held to account was a good idea. These same blood-soaked assholes, Eric Erickson, mm-hmm. Pammy Atlas, Instapundit, Bill Kristol, all the same people who profited from dead Americans in Iraq, personally and professionally, who used a lie and bloodshed and dead Americans to build their career, now have the fucking audacity to take four people who were killed in a tragic incident and once again use dead Americans to float their neocon wingnut bullshit. Why these people are still on my planet, I do not understand. Mm-hmm. But I'm all for the First Amendment. They have absolute freedom of speech. They can say whatever they want. But why Bill Kristol is still anywhere near a fucking microphone has less to do with his First Amendment rights than the fact that they're very rich people who keep wanting to put people like that on television. Mm-hmm. And his apologists and friends keep putting people like that in front of cameras as if they're legitimate, as if they have something to say. So everyone knows how the game is played now. So you can watch it play out in real time. Mm-hmm. You can watch it go from a bunch of screaming wingnuts to Fox News lying, to Breitbart.com bolstering their lie, to lawmakers picking it up. And you know what this is? This is the Clinton playbook.
It is. It is.
This is absolutely, you have a right-wing crackpot billionaire mm-hmm. paying American Spectator to make up lies about the Clintons. And then you keep making up more lies and more lies and more lies and talking about the scandal-plagued administration. And then once you've made up enough lies, you can get lawmakers in your own party right. to start doing investigations of all of these rumors of scandal. It's exactly the same playbook. So that's why it's so depressingly predictable.
Because it is. And I was deeply depressed by this when I saw this on MSNBC, that they took this headline of lawmakers push back.
Right.
As if they weren't following Roger Ailes' bidding, because he runs the Republican Party.
And that's... So since we've already been down this road
so many
in the times. 90s
yeah.
and in the 2000s
and throughout every week of this podcast in 4 years, we've done
why.
That. Yeah.
The question now has to be, who is paying David Gregory not to report the story honestly? Who is paying George Stephanopoulos to turn his head and look the other way? Because the story, again, this is the same playbook being run over and over again by the same people over and over again, who are given a get-out-of-jail-free card every fucking time. So the question is, who is behind that media conspiracy to keep allowing these people a microphone, a megaphone, and keep insisting that the actual story will never be reported as news? The actual story is the Republican Party is insane. It's run by crazy people. It has lost its mind. It's a tragedy. It's a terribly dangerous thing for a nuclear superpower to have one of its two political parties demented and insane. But that's the fact. So why is that not the story? Why is that not just why is that not the story? Why is that never the story? Why are you never allowed to talk about that as that, except if you're Chris Hayes and you talk about it for 20 minutes on MSNBC in front of a bunch of liberals? That to me is fascinating.
Well, didn't you find it interesting, too? I found out his name. It's Representative Yarmuth from Kentucky today was also on MSNBC talk. And they were talking about Rand Paul and unemployment benefits, you know, actually hurt the unemployed and make it less likely that they'll go out and look for real work. And it's creating a dependency. And Representative Yarmuth, who is from Kentucky and is a Democrat, reminded Ari Melber that Rand Paul is the only person saying that.
Yes.
And so, you know, there is no one else other than Rand Paul saying that extending unemployment benefits hurts the economy and hurts unemployed people. And maybe you shouldn't be having Rand Paul on your TV so often to talk about this, because really, it's only him. Now, I can see MSNBC's point of allowing Rand Paul to speak for all Republicans on this.
Sure.
But it was this Democratic representative who pointed out that really there are going to be a lot of Republican House members who are going to vote for an extension of unemployment benefit because it's hurting their districts a lot to not have this money coming in.
Right.
So yeah, well, but I just wonder if we on the left aren't contributing for our own political ends in making Rand Paul's voice bigger than it actually is.
I'm sure there's some merit to that. Mm-hmm. On the other side,
I'm not changing the subject. This is an and, not an but.
On the other hand, unemployment benefits were not extended.
Exactly. Yeah.
So
yeah.
There were.
And Democrats voted for that budget and the president signed it.
And there were a couple of hundred. The reason I'm given to understand is that the Republicans would not absolutely categorically would not do it. So if it were only Rand Paul, that would be one vote.
That's true.
So obviously there is some massive.
Paul Ryan did put his foot down and say, this is where we're going to compromise.
Yeah.
Unemployment benefits to stop. Yeah.
And you can. At least I can very easily, even if I'm not in the room, reverse engineer the conversation back to Republican dogma, which is if you're poor, you're morally defective.
Yep, yep.
And what you need if you're poor is you need to be kicked harder.
Yep.
And if you're not finding a job, it's because you're not looking hard enough, even though to get unemployment benefits, you have to look for a job.
That's the crazy part of it.
And so there's no economic argument. There's no rational sociological argument. There's no psychological argument. There's no argument
no.
in terms of human infrastructure, in terms of keeping people working just to keep their skill sets up. There's no sane reason not to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And yet we're not doing it.
Yep.
And the reason is because one of our two major political parties
is
criminally insane and needs to be put down like a rabid dog and needs to start over. And that is a real story. And I don't know if you saw this thing with Jonathan Carl.
Yes.
He's usually a reliable Republican ripping boy.
Yeah.
He'll carry water for you. But even his gag limit was exceeded. And when he's interviewing Ted Cruz, who was game changers of 2013.
But I'm above politics. I'm really not paying any attention to politics at all. No, that's not my goal. No.
This is the guy.
What?
This was the guy who led the government shutdown.
Yep.
Who made John Boehner cry like a toddler. He made me do it. I didn't want to do it. If only I had some position like Speaker of the House where I could avoid doing things like this. So he made John Boehner look like the powerless alcoholic idiot that he is. So Ted Cruz in this interview is asked, well, don't you think the government shutdown didn't work out very well? Jonathan Carl, again, is just tossing him softballs. He's not grilling him because Jonathan Carl is a tool. Mm-hmm. But Ted Cruz responds almost like that mock Luke Russert.
Jimmy Dore show?
On the Jimmy Dore show. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Bruce, for sending us some clips from the Jimmy Dore show. If you haven't listened to Jimmy Dore lately, he has a voice artist on there who does a great Luke Russert, and it was very funny. I put it up, one of them up on Open Thread this week at Crooked and Liars.
It made us
very
laugh.
Funny. Yes,
and
Republicans will tell you.
Yeah, when asked a direct question about what he thinks, fake Luke Russert will always say, "Well, a Republican would tell you that that's not true." Yeah, but it's not true. So what is your opinion about the fact that they're lying?
A
Republican would tell you that they're not lying.
They're not lying. Yeah,
Again, okay. And as a very brief aside, I have noticed that everyone who is pissed off Luke Russert at MSNBC is now unemployed by MSNBC.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm just saying, taking care of family.
Coincidence?
Yeah.
You think?
Yeah. You don't piss off Michael Corleone. That's all I'm saying. But Ted Cruz, when asked sort of point blank about the government shutdown you engineered, didn't work. Wasn't that a bad thing?
Politically,
and his response was,
pay attention to politics.
Well, his response was, the Democrats and the president shut down the government. They chose, and he just, it was this, and he did it with this absolutely patented,
straight-faced,
conservative smirk on his face, the sort of Rich Lowry smirk on his face.
The Obama shutdown didn't work because
I know you're not going to reach across this table and slap me.
Yeah,
smirk on his face. I can get away with anything. Fuck you. I can get away with anything. I can say whatever the fuck I want. I can piss in your ear, and there's not jack shit you can do about it. And you will invite me back next week. So fuck you.
Yep.
And even Jonathan Carl had to give him an Eric Cantor. Come on. Come on. And to his credit as an actor, Ted Cruz didn't break character.
No, he didn't.
He did that. And I know I've used this trope many times before. He did that thing from The Guide for the Married Man.
What woman?
Joey Bishop caught in bed with a woman. naked. In case you haven't seen the movie, it's a series of vignettes about how to cheat on your wife, successfully or unsuccessfully, from the 50s or 60s. And one example is Walter Matthau asking his mentor, well, what happens if you're caught? And his mentor says, you deny it.
You deny it.
But what if you deny, 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 just deny it. Mm-hmm. If you're caught red-handed with the evidence, just deny, 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 and you'll get away with it. And that has become essentially how the Republican Party works. Yep. If caught shutting the government down, tell them the communist Democrats did it, not you, and just keep denying it.
Well, and we had a letter from one of our regular correspondents, listeners, saying, look, you talked about if they ever shut down the government again, just telling, well, if the government shut down, we can't send out Social Security checks, can we?
Yeah.
And this person who writes us fairly often said, you know, I have an old lady relative who calls it the Obama shutdown.
Yeah.
And you will not convince these people that anything negative that happens isn't Obama's fault.
No. They're a dead loss.
Yeah.
Forget them.
If you go that route, if you attack Social Security, if you decide to make the shutdown really affect Fox News viewers' lives, they'll come after you with knives. You know, that's going to be your fault.
I just wanted to run down one more little lovely detail about Benghazi.
Mm-hmm.
I want to give you a direct quote, because this really is a well-known dynamic process. First, Fox News breaks the story. They filter it through the Breitbart Collective, some other secondary source. And then, again, dredge up one Democrat from somewhere who's willing to say something. We call this the Holy Joe Lieberman effect. And then this is a direct quote for a Fox News headline from December 30th. Congress, in bipartisan tone, disputes report Al-Qaeda not involved in deadly Benghazi attack.
Mm-hmm.
Almost immediately thereafter, Representative Paul Gosar, Republican, you needn't doubt it. According to witnesses, New York Times recent claims about terrorist attack in Benghazi are false. So we've moved from it's a made-up story by Fox News to it's a bipartisan story that has witnesses.
Yeah.
And finally, you have Charles Krauthammer.
I'm sorry, I'm laughing. It's not funny.
Charles Krauthammer, headline, New York Times Benghazi report undeniably about protecting Dems and Hillary.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then and it just goes on and on like that. Then you have another Republican congressman going back on Fox News, doing an epic takedown, which is all over Twitter. It's his epic takedown. His epic takedown, here's what I describe it as. We circle once again back to Fox News, where it's time for Roger Ailes to harvest what Roger Ailes has sown. Courtesy of Republican Congressman Trey Gowdy, whose epic takedown consists of Congressman Gowdy dutifully regurgitating Roger Ailes' talking points back into one of Roger Ailes' television cameras. That entirely closed system is what many tens of millions of Americans call news.
Yep.
And you will never, ever reach them. So please stop trying. What you can do is go after the people in the middle whose business is pretending that what Rand Paul or Ted Cruz says is every bit as credible or every bit as non-credible as what some Democrat said or what some liberal said or what some hippie said.
Both sides do it.
Both sides do it.
I want to end our show today, and we are ending early because we're recording late and we have kids at home who are being very good.
I wanted to add one more thing. This last week or so, there was a sudden rush of reporting about how rotten the press is. And I wanted to not let this podcast go by without pointing out that within the space of a week, you had that Meet the Press graphic that you were quoting earlier, that graph about, yes, it's not just a rumor. This really is as bad as you think it is. Republicans far outweigh in terms of number of times they're on and the number of Republicans who are on. There just isn't any comparison.
Mm-hmm.
Politico has been busted, as I'm sure everybody knows, basically stringing together a bunch of positive opinions about their advertisers and turning them into stories.
Yep.
Literally selling their credibility as the insider Washington tip sheet, the go-to people, the people that Luke Russert reads to know what's going on. nakedly just sell their advertisers' party line as if they're news tips and pocket the money. It's called fucking payola. But that's the number one insider. And finally, Time Magazine.
This is unbelievable.
Time Magazine spun off its Time Incorporated into a separate company. And that company...
Yeah, Time Incorporated spun off the magazine.
And that company now reports to the business side, not the editorial side.
Not the editorial side.
They essentially... The people who will now decide what goes into Time Magazine as news now effectively report to the advertising department.
The business side of the show, of the organization. Yep.
Or as they pointed... As they quoted the new CEO as saying, this will... I'm quoting an article quoting him, so it's a secondary quote. It's necessary to create revenue opportunities and to stem the tide of declining subscription and advertising sales. I'm not saying that they're not hemorrhaging money. I think that a lot of them deserve to go the way of the dinosaur. I hear rumors that David Gregory might be out at Meet the Press, which would delight me if I didn't also hear rumors that Joe Scarborough and Mika would take over for him, which is just, oh, really?
Yeah.
So we're tossing out Bozo the Clown and we're putting in Wizzo the Clown in his place. That's great. That's not too insulting to my intelligence.
That'll make it less Republican to have Joe Scarborough on there. Yeah.
And this week there just happened to be this back-to-back-to-back coverage of, this is how rotten it is. This is how nakedly corrupt the people who control...
Never mind how corrupt Congress is.
Yeah.
Media is just as corrupt, if not more so.
And
it's bad enough when it's your home decorating magazine being sponsored by Home Depot.
Yeah.
But Time Magazine is now going to simply be sponsored by whatever advertisers are... brazen enough to buy ad space, and the news will be reflecting what they want it to be.
And part of me says, good. part of me is horrified. Part of me says, look, this is what your libertarian utopia of tomorrow looks like.
Exactly. Yep.
This is what the free market laissez-faire journalism looks like.
This is what trickle down looks like.
It's the person with the most money controls what, not just what you hear and what you see, but controls the debate over what you will see and hear. You will never be allowed to hear an opposing point of view because that opposing point of view is bad for the bottom line.
And once money becomes speech, money becomes the only speech.
Exactly.
And that's what's going on. Yep.
Put that on a T-shirt, baby.
Okay.
All right. So let's get to our listener letter.
Our listener, Kurt, wrote me on Facebook. And so anybody can go over and read on our Facebook page what he wrote in our comment section. But I wanted to bring it up to the top. I said he wrote without rancor, and I believe him because he responded back to my response.
Is that a font?
No. He said Luke killed rancor. So
okay. That's good.
Okay. He wrote, I'm not quite sure what it is you had to pray about regarding gay marriage, which is the civil rights issue of our time. Would you have had to pray about Richard and Mildred Loving's right to be married? Now, this was about last week's podcast where I was talking about my own church and having to pray about their approach to gay marriage.
Uh-huh.
And what I meant, and I just want to clarify this, is that I have to pray about how I'm going to change things within my church and how best to do that.
Yeah.
And whether that means leaving or whether that means staying and fighting is something that I'm going to have to work out. And I am working it out. And I'm not, that's something that's not going to happen on the podcast, I got to tell you.
And
as podcastable as it would be, I'm going to keep that private because.
You pray in private.
You pray in private. And also, I don't want anyone from, I don't want anyone from our church life saying, well, you know, she podcasts about this all the time, about church business.
No.
You know? And that's not what I'm going to do.
Well, I would only add two things. And the first is, during the time of Loving versus Virginia, that's what Kurt's alluding to. Mm-hmm. Martin Luther King was a reverend.
Yeah.
And he stayed a reverend.
Mm-hmm.
If it weren't for a strong faith-based community, even though elements of their faith, I think, are horribly wrong, you're going to find a lot of homophobia in the black church. The reason I know this is part number two. My ex is African American.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I was an interracial marriage. My marriage would have been illegal during my lifetime. So I believe me, am keenly aware of the issues. I can quote you Loving versus Virginia. So I take what Kurt said very seriously.
Mm-hmm.
I also know that I have been to an AME church many, many more times than once. And the degree to which the pastor is very careful to to make sure that when you hug someone, it's a manly hug,
mm-hmm.
and not a not one of those
not a gay hug. Yeah.
The degree to which in some churches, I'm not saying all of them or even most of them, I have no idea of the statistics. Of the ones I went to, which was it was fairly common to have homophobia right near the top.
Well, and that's why Karl Rove wanted gay marriage on the ballot. Yeah.
And that's why when it comes to mixing politics and faith, it's very tricky.
It is.
Because without a faith-based community to draw on, the civil rights movement would never have gotten anywhere.
Yeah. Yeah.
And yet.
Well, and let's not forget that, you know, people are complaining today on the internet about the Pope has just excommunicated an Australian priest who is in favor of women priests and same-sex marriage.
Yeah.
And
because it's the Catholic Church.
Well, people aren't covering the backside of that story. Two things. One is this guy actually resigned from the priesthood in 2011 and started his own organization.
It's called a schism. Yeah.
And the Catholic Church, the Vatican, is very efficient at excommunicating people who start their own churches.
Yeah.
So
they've got a long record
at that. They've got a lot better at that than they were in the time of Martin Luther.
There's a special form, actually.
Yeah. I think and this guy, the excommunication process by which the church does this started against this guy 3 years ago. So it's yes, Pope Francis did put the final cross on it. Is that the way?
He crossed his crosses and dotted his. Yeah.
Yeah. Not that we need to hold Pope Francis blameless in this. The Pope is Catholic. Yeah. Newsflash. The Pope continues to be Catholic. So if you don't like the Catholic Church, that's another argument to make. You know.
And this is where I slip in a little science fiction recommendation, which is read Octavia Butler.
Yeah, you keep saying that.
Octavia Butler is so good.
I can't do it. It's too depressing.
Well, not just Parable of the Sower, but read her short stories and other things. She is really good about writing about the complexity of a person living in America who is African American, or in some cases, it's an alien that uses humans as hosts.
Mm-hmm.
After a couple of generations of that, you have relatives on every side of the issue.
Yeah.
Often by rape. I mean, I'm not gonna pull any punches here.
No, don't sugarcoat it. Yeah.
But it was after many generations have passed. Everybody has a very complicated relationship with the past because you can't just point to your good ancestors and say, those are my people.
Yeah.
And I will just say that one of the things that my former grandmother-in-law used to do that was so fucking adorable. This sort of sums up sort of how complicated things can be. She was like 1/16th Cherokee. High cheekbones, straighter hair than average. But, you know, 1/16th or 1/12th or something like that. But apparently when she and her husband would like be reading the newspaper or watching the news and something would come on, and it was an African-American youth had been arrested for something or other. She would just, you know, shake her head, look at her husband and say, "Your people." And she said it with a smile, but it was, I have horse thieves in my ancestry.
Yeah, sure.
And I have people I'm very proud of in my ancestry. So the only reason I say this is if you read Octavia Butler, you get a sense of that generational complexity of all of the people you're related to, even the ones who you violently disagree with and wish you weren't. That's what makes teasing apart faith and intergenerational problems so tricky and so interesting and such a wonderfully complicated narrative. Because it is so complicated.
One of these days we'll do a long podcast on how high-minded and civilized the Celts were. Not really. No.
My people.
My people.
400 years of British oppression. What do you expect?
I still bear the Campbell chin.
Yeah.
And we all do on our side of the family. So
the Campbells
are coming not because they're not coming to give you a library book.
The only reason half my family weren't Confederate soldiers is they got the hell out of, you know, they made it across the Mississippi River ahead of the press gang.
Yeah. So right.
I'm no saint. I am just incredibly impressed and fascinated by how complicated and amazing history is and faith is when you start to look at it as a novel and not as a short story.
Yeah. And to sum up what the second part of Kurt's statement, which really helped me in a way. He said, it's a sign of your Christian privilege that you automatically assume that the man who lost his daughter would want to seek spiritual counsel. And I did not automatically assume that. His Facebook page spoke to angels and heaven and a number of other things that indicated that spiritual counsel might be welcome, might not. But I wasn't automatically assuming anything about him. But Kurt pointed out, and I wanted to point out to our listeners, there are non-religious and atheist support groups for people grieving for the death of a loved one. And one of them is called Grief Beyond Belief. And if you Google Grief Beyond Belief, you'll be pointed to their Facebook page and other websites where there is fellowship and support for those who want to seek support for grief without a religious bent. And I wanted some of our listeners are non-believers and might want to know about that. Thanks, Kurt, for letting us know about Grief Beyond Belief.
Thanks. We appreciate it, Kurt. We really do.
Each week we post to our Facebook page and website an Internet Kitty sent in by you, the listeners. This week's Internet Kitty is Rusty. Rusty is a former stray who tamed all the dogs at his new home. The owner says, his name is Rusty. He hung around outside our house for days on end. We started giving him food and water. After about a week or less, my wife was coming in with her hands full, and he just ran in the house with three big dogs. And he made immediate fast friends with the dogs, but it took quite a bit longer with our other cat. Yeah, I'm sure it did. The dogs just go, oh, look, another cat. Okay.
Yeah, okay. Your people.
Your people.
Yeah.
You can send your Internet Kitty to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, or you can also write to both of us. Feel free to write us. Be aware that if you write us at that address or any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service Go Postal Union's letter on the air unless you say otherwise. Now, Driftglass, middle child is here, and she would like to let us know what the Internet Kitties say this week. Is that all right with you?
That's fantastic. Middle child, have at
middle
it.
Middle child, you have at it. How are the Internet Kitties this week, middle child?
The Internet Kitties wish everyone a happy new year, especially in Minecraft.
Especially in Minecraft.
Oh, and our cat and our kitten is sitting right here taking a nap. Yes. It says hi to Rusty, and he says, I want to meet a dog. Can I come over to your house sometime?
Oh, there you go. He slept through the whole podcast, too.
Well put, middle child. Well put.
Your voice.
Well put. Happy New Year, everybody.
Happy New Year, everyone.
Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey-doving. Let's forget about the whine and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with the switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
The Professional Left Podcast is recorded under Creative Commons license, copyright 2014, Driftglass Blue Gal Podcast.